This is Laura Deirdre with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Tom Andriola, Vice Chancellor of Information Technology and Data, as well as Chief Digital Officer for UC Irvine. Tom, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Laura, it's wonderful to be back on the podcast. Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm always fascinated by our conversations. You know, we really dig into some meaty and interesting topics, and so I'm excited to do the same today as well. And first off, you know, I was wondering, how did you become interested in health tech for keeping people healthy? Is there a personal story here, or how does that connect to your career?
Yeah, there is a personal story, and exactly as you said, it connects to my career. It's like an intersection of your personal life and your professional life in a way that I wouldn't have anticipated. So, you know, as you know, I've been in the healthcare industry most of my professional career. You know, I've been involved in how technology has impacted healthcare, you know, over a couple of decades. You know, when software became a very important part of the way that healthcare organizations work and patient care works, how the data from, you know, that's generated through technology and software became the value proposition. I always say it's like the MRI is tech, but the image is data, and the diagnosis comes from the data, right? So the data value proposition started to become a much more important thing for anyone in the healthcare ecosystem. And then it's been about big data and multimodal data. And now we're talking about AI all the time. So yeah, so I've been a part of that. But, you know, as my colleague, Jeff Margolis, always says, when it comes to the health system, you are sometimes a patient, but you're also a consumer. And that's no different for me, right? So, you know, as I was getting older and I started seeing changes in my health situation, you know, I started to take more of an interest. Like, from a professional perspective, I know how this goes for patients. And I started to see some of those changes in my own life. And so, you know, trying to be an empowered health consumer, I started taking more active interest in, you know, I knew what the right decisions were. Most of us do. But how do I know that I'm making the right decisions? And of course, since I'm a data person, how am I using data to inform my health decisions that I'm making going forward? And so that, you know, created this kind of educate myself. How do I find the evidence, you know, to know the things that I'm doing are working? It led me to understand the difference between really the sick care market and the healthcare market, and concepts like the difference between lifespan and health span, right? So this journey of really going deeper into understanding and to be very, very data driven and asking questions like, well, how valuable is it for my one annual visit to see my primary care physician versus data that I might collect on myself every day and have 365 days worth of data and trends to understand what's going on around? Am I the healthiest person that I could be? Do I own this data, or is the health system own this data? Can I take that data and give it to another doctor or to a research team? And so that led me to do kind of novel things like waive my HIPAA rights so I could actually port my data more freely and give it to whoever I wanted to. And for example, research teams around the country have my data sets and are doing things with them. I started participating in clinical trials, but saying, look, I'll participate if you'll give the data you collect on me back into me for my kind of personal health data store. And so, you know, kind of what's happened over time is I've kind of become this empowered health consumer. And, you know, that's kind of a new thing in our society through people who bought wearables and those types of things. My wife thinks I take it a little bit farther than normal, right? Because, you know, it's the Oura Ring, it's the smart scale, it's the blood pressure cuff, it's the nutrition app. And so I've got about 100 data points every day about my health situation that I've been collecting for a number of years now that really have informed my health journey in a very, very data-driven way that I can talk about, but I also can share with others and give them kind of perspectives of what happened, how do I know, in ways that people find very interesting.
That is definitely fascinating to hear. And certainly, you know, what a great opportunity you have to collect all that data, that information, and really see how it works together to build the picture of your health and inform your decision making going forwards. So, you know, in thinking about everything that you take a look at every day and are measuring and tracking, what are some of the specific trends that you're keeping your eye on right now and tracking?
Yeah, so there's having data, and then there's using data. And using data means, you know, am I making more informed decisions? And, I'm a big fan of Peter Attia, and he recently put out a book talking about book was called Outlive, and it's the science and art of longevity. I was really a big fan of that book when it came out. And he talks about the four horsemen, and the horsemen are the four disease categories that usually kind of take away our health span. Metabolic disease, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and now neurodegenerative disease, in that category. And so I really try to, think about it from a risk management perspective in terms of, am I doing the things, the things that I'm tracking are kind of tied to keeping those things out, right? So food and nutrition, really making sure that from a metabolic health perspective, I've got a pretty good view on what's going on. Cardiovascular, kind of, exercise and those types of things. Neurodegenerative disease, sleep. Sleep is so important from the standpoint of giving your body a chance to clear out all those, all those bad substances that are floating around, and especially in the brain. And so, I use kind of these models, again, evidence-based models that medical professionals come out, and I say, how can I incorporate that into way that I'm managing my personal health situation? And how do I can I collect data and look at that data over time to tell me, are things changing, right? Are things changing? Because as we age, we start to see changes, but we can be surprised by them if we're not actually kind of monitoring them. And that's kind of how, I've started then using, kind of using the data myself, and then also trying to use the medical profession to help inform my choices or the way that I think about problems. One of the jokes I like to tell people, just like people's like, well, give me an example, Tom. It's like, well, I'm one of those annoying patients, who might be sitting with their doctor, and the doctor says, like, well, you should really worry about heart disease. It's like, how much red meat do you eat? And the average patient will say, it's like, oh, I don't know, maybe, four or five times a month. And it's based on kind of, recalling into your brain and thinking about it. I'm the annoying patient who will say something. It's like, well, over the last 2 years, I've averaged, 2.4 times per month eating red meat on an average of about 3 ounces per sitting. And I'm like, I've got the data to back that number up, right? And it's kind of funny because for some people it's like way over the top, but for me, it's just about being informed to make the best decisions that are right for me.
Well, that's fascinating and, truly, truly amazing that you can collect that information and, as you said, have the data to back that up and really be precise about what you're doing and what you're talking through with your clinicians.
Laura, on that kind of precise, sometimes people say, it's like, Tom, I could never be that disciplined. And I said, well, what if I told you that you could kind of, to the 90% level, track your day, track what you eat for nutrition. I don't track food or calories. I track for nutrition achievement. I'm like, what if I said you could do that in 5 to 7 minutes per day? Does that sound like an overly disciplined thing to ask of you? And people are like, no, that doesn't sound bad at all. And I'm like, well, that's really all it takes, right? It's little things. It's not, we're not talking about something that is going to change your entire lifestyle to be able to do. And I think that's the balance I've found is it's so incorporated in that it's almost happening just as part of life rather than it looks like I'm doing something overly disciplined that's not sustainable.
Absolutely. That makes a ton of sense, and certainly is easy to devote just a few minutes a day to really becoming more conscientious about how we're treating our bodies, what we're putting in how we really are looking at our health. And, I understand that you're also working with some companies along these lines. What are the companies that you're working with and how are they leaning into the consumer wellness market?
Yeah, certainly this market has gotten huge, right? Certainly the wearable movement and, Apple Watch and Fitbits. And so, there are millions of people now walking around with these and some of those things I work with. The other thing I'll say about kind of this space is not that I'm in this category, right? But if you had the money and you bought a Lamborghini, then all of a sudden you kind of find the other people who also own Lamborghinis and you find these things in common. And so, you find individuals who are kind of into this space. People like Larry Smarr, who used to be a professor at UC San Diego, who might be the most measured, individual in terms of some of the data that he has around himself. I think of Mike Snyder, who's at Stanford, who's done research on this, but is also kind of a personal, personal health and personal measurement person. But some of the companies that, worked with, kind of beyond kind of the device companies, thinking about Apple, and you've got the Apple Health app is, this is a great one. It's called Measured Wellness, and it's a very, very early stage company. But think of it as, a data science consultation around your data in the same way that your medical image is sent to a radiologist for a read and a report. So think about your wearable data going to a specialist, a combination of medical profession and data scientist service that basically says, well, looking at your data over time, your cardiovascular patient, because they might be working with the patient directly, or they might be working with the primary care physician who ordered the quote unquote consultation. Like, here's some things that we see in their data that might be valuable when you kind of sit down with them and help them manage a cardiovascular state. Also, the doctors that measure wellness also work directly with patients in a primary care fashion and use that data as a conversation piece to change the nature of the doctor-patient discussion. Because you're now just not just talking about generalities or what do you recall, but you're saying, look, we've been looking at your data over the last 6 months. There are things going on in your life because your quote unquote, your stress levels and your resiliency factors look to have changed over the last 6 months. Is there something that we should talk about? And so Measured Wellness is one of those companies. There's a company called Engage3 I work with in a new initiative. It's kind of a spin-off of their core business, working with retailers called Project Health, where they've had a very successful business working with retailers, really driving price optimization to help retailers to price their products to optimize the balance between price, margin, and volume, right? Because when you're a retailer like a grocer, it's all about volume of churn and how much revenue you get for shelf space. But now they're saying, look, we could take this model, we could apply it to help people make better food choices. And if you think about what the Walmarts of the world and the CVSs of the world are doing in terms of generating a place where the health consumer is going to interact, and that concept of Walmart's become your primary care physician, and they might write your prescription, but they also might be able to point you towards food that's in that store that quote unquote might be the equivalent healthy decisions to manage, let's say, high blood pressure. This type of optimization engine could become very valuable to quote unquote manage the incentives associated with getting patients to make better decisions for themselves through food, which they're going to go buy anyway. And then I've got a couple of research teams that are working on things that might become spin out opportunities, in things like personal health navigators that really look at personalization and proactive care and pulling your data together, allowing you to put multimodal data together, right? Because it's, you've got waveforms, you've got alphanumeric data, you might have medical imaging, lab test results. And so, how do you start to get that data together and find insights across different data types through different types of AI techniques? And then, this company's also, this team is also now pivoting with kind of generative AI tools and the concept of health agents, right? So you may have read some things recently about people talking about, generative AI and evolving to agents. So, not just generating content, but actually helping in decision making, task completion, and those types of things. And so, OpenCHA, which stands for Conversational Health Agents, is a personalized large language model agent platform where it's not just, hey, having a conversation with you about your data and the right decisions, but it's also looking to connect you to the right resources. And today, as an example, I look at my nutrition achievement maybe before I go to dinner, and it might inform what I plan to eat if my wife and I are eating out that night. But what if the agent were to actually be, here are the best places for you to eat given the nutritional achievement that you still haven't gotten today? And so it's kind of, giving me the recommendation, and someday might even make that, if I click yes, makes that, that reservation for us. So, there's lots of things in this new world that's going to be powered through AI. It's not just going to be about analyzing data, but it's going to be about connecting what comes out of that, those insights, and helping you take the next step or get to the right step. And so these companies, I think, are very exciting. They're very early stage, but I think these are the types of companies that you're going to read about one, two, 3 years from now that are going to impact the healthcare space.
Well, that's great to hear and just fascinating to see how quickly these things are evolving. And, just really as you were talking through the different ways that AI is playing a part in this, the different opportunities to really connect people with the right resources and develop a deeper understanding is really so cool. Where do you see some of the big opportunities for physicians and health systems to use this data for more targeted wellness plans as well?
Yeah, I think this movement really provides an opportunity, and I've learned this from Dr. Mike Carrizo, who's the CEO and really founder of Measured Wellness. It provides this opportunity to really change the nature of the conversation between the patient and the medical professional. Let's in this case, let's just call it the doctor, your primary care physician, right? Because instead of this kind of searching to try to find the right question, find the right answer, you're now talking, you're looking at an evidence base through data, and you can actually target the conversations and have a different type of conversation. I've always said, or at least as I've been on this journey, I've started to think about, it's like, I have a financial person who I talk through my long-term financial goals for, have for my adult life, whether it's what, to have for my family, to send my kids to college. Why isn't my primary care physician interaction similar to that? I want to be a healthy person. I want to live into my later years and to be able to do the things that I want to do, to climb a flight of stairs, to be able to go on a 5 mile hike, to run around with my grandkids someday, right? Why is my conversation about not about what are the things that I need to do? Why is it not a consultation rather than this kind of just kind of back and forth where I don't really feel a lot of value other than it's been a touch point that happens once a year? Why can't it be a different conversation? Why can't it be an ongoing conversation where technology is touching base with me on a very regular basis, nudging me in the right direction? And then, the conversation that we have once a year is a much more informed conversation about, I can see the decisions that you're making for the other 364 days of your life. And I think you need to really think about some additional changes here. You got to get up from that chair and out from that computer more. Why don't you take more Zoom calls via walks, right? Why are we not talking about those things through data? And so I think the doctor-patient conversation has an opportunity to really deepen a change and deepen through what we see coming through technology and data.
That definitely makes a lot of sense, and it certainly is a reality that you can imagine in terms of having those really intelligent conversations, data-driven talking points and really action items that you can take back, and patients really are able to then be empowered to stay healthy and live healthier lives. How do you see this work evolving over the next 2 to 3 years or so?
Yeah, I think like we're seeing in a lot of ways in our society right now through this, phenomenon of AI, I think it's going to move very fast. I mean, I think we're going to see new types of services and touch points become available to us, at rapid paces, faster than we'll probably be able to consume it. One of my mentors once taught me, it's like, look, the future's already here. It's just unevenly distributed, he used to say. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing now is that, these advances are happening very fast. They're becoming available. Certain people who kind of like myself, I get a chance to kind of follow the space. So I see things earlier than, let's say, the large population does. So I think we're going to see these things come about very fast. I think the adoption of them and then the equity around the adoption of them is the thing that we really need to come back and think broadly about, because these things also are advances and they benefit people, but if they benefit only small parts of the population, or let's say parts of the population who are more privileged, it doesn't address the larger challenges that we have as a society, right? So I think we're going to see fast evolution. I think the focus point needs to, how do we bring this to large percentages of our population, or as is becoming more popular, how do we bring AI to all and not just a select few? So that's my hope for the next 2 to 3 years.
That's amazing to hear, and certainly, you know, so important to keep those gaps in mind. Tom, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been a fascinating discussion, really, you know, cutting edge things that we're talking about today that are a reality and will continue to grow and develop and evolve. I appreciate your time here and look forward to connecting with you again very soon.
Laura, thanks for having me.